Oh, yeah. Welcome to the Jordan Phoenix Show.
That's an intro, man. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, I'll be showing my grandma's recipe for Brussels sprouts.
That's a local band named, they're called Thames?
Thames, probably. Well, I'm assuming like the river in England.
Yeah, well, like the Thames River. Thames, yeah. But they call it Thames because they're assholes. And that's and so the guy, shout out to Xander, he's going to be the engineer for this, but once I figure my shit out, kind of, the engineer.
Yeah.
And so he's got this band, and I was like, whoa, that's a cool song. So
It is really cool.
It's built for this, right?
Yeah, it's putting it in front of a podcast, though, gives it that kind of like...
Silly.
Like that silly talk show kind of stuff. Like if I listen to that just on... If someone said, hey, check out my band, listen to these songs, I'm like, hell yeah, this is exactly up my alley.
Right.
But he put it in front of a podcast, and it's just like, okay, well...
I know, dude, it's perfect. It's perfect. Okay, yeah. So, all right, here we go. Intro. So this is the first one.
I love how much stumbling you're going to be doing during this because it's the first one.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so without further ado, it's so, just silly. We have, oh shit, what's your name? Oh, I'm blanking.
It starts with a B.
Oh yeah. Ben Vogelsang. Ben Vogelsang. Oh, yeah. See, we got the people are out.
Yeah, I can't
right?
believe that you had them all fit in your basement.
Yeah. So Ben Vogelsang is here with me for the inaugural episode. And the reason that he is here is because he is my other half of me. In the context of what I want this podcast to be about, which is just, you know, stuff. Ben and I have done a number of projects together in the music video world and just in the film. It's not actually film. It's digital, but in the film world.
I think we can arguably say in the creative world because it hasn't been exclusively music videos.
That's true. Yeah.
Largely that, but.
Yeah. And we instantly connected and have been friends. I mean, you know, friends for a year or more.
Going on 2 years because it was the
okay not important
yeah.
So that's where we're at and man that is weird it's okay this is the first we're in my basement right now which is weird and my phone is ringing and my dog is down here and I just was like you know we're gonna start the podcast before we're probably ready to just so we can work the kinks out So Ben works at Hubbard Communications. Is that communication? Yeah, which is the point. I mean, he's the point guy. But he does all the other stations too. But
Point Keishi. I was about to go through my old before we got bought. I always had that like here's the
right,
station.
Pre-roll.
Yeah. So Point Keishi, 106.5 The Arch, 101 ESPN, and New Country 93.3.
Yeah, and so you are. Base. And on top of that, he's like, in my opinion, the best in St. Louis concert photographer.
Thanks, man.
I mean, I only know like two, but of those two people, you're the best. And to the point where you're like, you can't be any better. Like there's no, when you've reached the best of something, you can't, I mean, how do you push yourself, you know?
I appreciate those compliments on that. But it's one of those things like almost with anything creative, no matter what you do, you're always kind of comparing yourself to the next person.
Yeah, like imposter syndrome.
Yeah. And it's always been like, because everything I've done, because concert photography was something that I started kind of on a whim. It was about, I'd say my second year working for The Point, and the guy that they had decided to leave, or he didn't decide, I think he got let go because they were getting rid of that station, but he was their guy. So I'm like, well, I'll take it over and I'll start doing it because I'm interested.
Yeah.
And I got as much info as I could from him and just kind of went in blind, you know, and I had to...
start on auto, just...
Yeah, well, I mean, dude, honestly, I really didn't know how to do photography that well. This whole job is luck.
Right.
You know, it's I was really fortunate to get in and then...
Well, it's cute, you think. It's not... It's your... Anyway. No,
and I'm not trying to downplay myself, but literally when I got... Dude, if you would have seen the stuff that I was producing... When I got hired, it's amazing that I maintained a job because I really
it's still amazing
know.
Now that you're there. I mean,
well, I know. But no. I didn't really know what I was doing. Right. You know, I learned so much of the craft while being there and just having the freedom to have somebody who, for whatever reason, believed in me. And then they kept paying me, so I kept coming in and kept learning. So I had I got a benefit of having a job where I could also continue to learn and grow.
Right, and I feel like that's a reason, that's one of the reasons why we connected is because of our lack of formal training. Yeah. I feel like we were both we're just are figuring things out as we go. And, you know, even though you know so much more about a whole subset of things than me, I feel like we immediately knew we were complementary to each other, but down the same path of...
Yeah, I think you and I had a very yin and yang kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The stuff that you lacked, I had, and vice versa.
Right. While we both lack on-set experience of actual, mm-hmm. like, Hollywood production, like, you know,
yeah.
which is a weird thing, because that's a thing that I've been trying to come to terms with in St. Louis, is, like, it is a very small market where that exists, and mm-hmm. we've recently done some bigger projects together where we've had a bigger crew and yeah. line producers and stuff, which is incredible, but you kind of, oh, this is what it is, you know? But, like, there's not a lot of it happening in St. Louis.
It's
for reasons like weather.
Sure. But also, like, I mean, there's not, I don't think the money's here to do, like, a lot of things on that big a scale.
Right. Well, and this is probably wrongly. I know it's about taxes and all that, but I think built into the problem with Missouri for doing film is the weather. It's just so, I mean, we deal with it every shoot is like, if it's going to be outside, there's a good chance that it'll be ruined. If it says in a 14-day forecast that it's going to be sunshine, you can bank that it's going to be rain and vice versa.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think inherently there's no reason to ever to try to make this an A market for, you know.
Sure. I mean, it is centralized.
That's true.
And it's very inexpensive.
That's true.
But I mean, I think that's part of it maybe, but it's also a limited part of it too because of everything else you can do inside.
Right.
You know, it's a really weird kind of,
yeah, I guess that's thing. True. I mean, yeah, because they used to make everything inside, yeah. right? So, but like, you know, Atlanta and like Georgia in general is just like beautiful. Like people get in car accidents if it rains for more than 5 minutes. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's no rain. Like, you know.
I think too, I'm speaking again, I'm speaking with absolutely no education on any of this. But
me too, like, and everything
like
I'm saying.
So I'm, everything here is naive. Yep. But at the same time, like I feel like those areas have, you know, you drive an hour in any direction and you have whatever scenery you want.
Right.
Missouri, you're kind of landlocked.
Yeah, you know? Dude. So, okay, I was born in Portland, Oregon, but I've lived here since I was one. But my parents, we go back to, you know, to Oregon every summer. And when you go to Oregon, in 1 hour from wherever you are, drop a pin where you are, 1 hour in any direction, it's a vastly different looking place. Mm-hmm. You're in the mountains or you're in this, like, river that cuts through a gorge, or you're in the ocean, or you're in the forest, or you're in a metropolis. Yeah. An hour anywhere outside of St. Louis feels like you're in cornfields, you know?
Right. Right. So. You have some different areas, but not, I mean, it's yeah. not a lot.
Yeah. 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 And that's, yeah, it's,
wait, why were you born in Portland? If you don't mind.
That's where my parents had sex.
Well, yeah, I figured that much, but like, were you Navy at all? Like, was your, any of your parents in the military, or is there?
No, my grandparents both lived in Oregon. They lived there, and then my mom got a job in, I don't really remember, maybe in St. Louis, or maybe
the only reason I'm asking is I was wondering if that was another weird parallel that you and I had, because you were born on that coast until a year old, and I was born in Virginia.
Oh, until a year,
and then moved back here.
We're yin and yang.
Yeah, man. Because my dad was Navy.
Okay.
So he was stationed out there.
And my dad was a draft dodger, I think. But
that's which how high in rank did he get?
Yeah, I don't know. He had his bone spurs. yeah, no. That's funny. That's interesting. So your dad was in the Navy, which explains a lot about you. Mm-hmm.
Love boats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Drawn to the water. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's not that interesting, really. But
I feel like we're going everywhere right now.
Yeah, where should we go?
I don't know. But anyways, no, I was just wondering, because that was the thing I think that you and I had, is we definitely complimented each other on a lot of different things. And it was just a weird, like, if you and I had that parallel, that would just been another thing. It's like, okay, well, we come from the opposite ends of the country.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Middle, but...
it's like a hook and a ladder, and we just
I remember the night that we met, because that was the that was the story of the year CD release show for Wolves.
For Wolves, yeah.
And
yeah.
And I had just come from photographing them in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And I think I was anticipating doing it here in St. Louis, because I was talking with Ryan. I was like, hey, let me follow you guys and I'll take pictures.
Ryan, the guitar player for Story of the Year. Uh-huh.
And went up there, went up to Chicago, shot the show, and I was turning pictures around, getting them that night. And then my plan was to go back and do that. But I think it was before we left, he was like, hey, when you get back to St. Louis, I want you to do video. Don't worry about photos. I go, okay, that's fine. And you're going to be working with this guy, Jordan Phoenix. And I'm like, in the back of my head, because I've been doing videos with these guys for a while too, I was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Oh, swooping in on your
action. Yeah, like, who the fuck is, yeah. I've never heard of him before. Right. Like,
how dare
like,
you? But yeah.
You know, and I kind of felt like, okay, well, I guess I'm being phased out and I don't. And I've also spent, four years as a one-man army at at work. You know, this is like, I can do this stuff by myself, you know, with, as far as like the production goes. So I'm usually running the show. Like a lot of the times it was, I'm kind of the key pillar there, and I have a bunch of people that I have delegate if we do like bigger pieces.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you're the director, you're the showrunner.
Yeah. So having to work under you, a guy who I've never met, never even heard of, was like, okay, well, fuck this shit. Like,
yeah, I picked up on that vibe a lot, especially since you came with like way cooler gear than me. You basically had the same gear as me, but like the better version of it.
Yeah, because I had my 300. I had a lot of stuff. I think it was definitely like a small penis kind of thing of like,
yeah,
I need to overcompensate because I have no idea who this guy is. And then we started working, and it was really funny because you know your craft very well, and you've built a business around that. You didn't know your camera.
Yeah, I still don't. I don't really know that, dude. Okay, so I was a musician. I guess I am a music. Like, so you know, I've been playing music since I was like 12, and I think I'm good. You know, I mean, I've done some cool stuff, but I don't know shit about guitars or amps. And I have buddies that are gearheads that are like, oh, do you put the humbuckers on the, and I'm like, ah, dude, you know, Blink-182 is one of my favorite bands. Like I like a piece of shit guitar that, you know what I mean? Like I've just never been a gearhead about stuff. And that has translated into cameras where it's like, I find a camera that I like, I find lenses that I like, and then I'm like locked down on that. And which I think will keep me from ever really being a DP because like, I'm going to find the camera that I want. I'm going to buy it and own it. I don't want to rent. I mean, I would under, if a client needed it, but like, it's just not, I would just hire a DP to use a camera that they're comfortable in.
Cause I mean, that was one of the things too, where like, I remember you and I were talking about doing stuff in slow-mo or something like that, or switching your camera to 60 frames per second.
Right.
And you were doing probably the hardest way of doing that.
Yeah. 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 And for sure. Yeah. Right.
And I'm like, well, dude, you just change this one thing and it's there. And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was definitely, I showed my cards. And here's the thing. This is a thing that goes, a reoccurring theme throughout life is like, it's not about the path you take. It's about where you end up.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard when you're on set, and I don't want to make this podcast super technical or anything, but like, cause you know, it's just generally, you know, you show up on the set and you see what somebody's using and you're like, oh, they got a 8K Red or, mm-hmm. oh, look at, you know, and all that stuff at the end of the day doesn't really matter. What matters is whatever that edit looks like.
Yeah.
In the end, what does it look like? And you see a lot of people overcompensate for the fact that their product's not good in the end. So they, you know, they have a really nice thing. I'm not saying that you're the guy that has the stuff, but
you're making a good point though, because that was the thing. It's like, I've seen those guys too, that like they'll go out and they'll shoot the same kind of stuff. But when you see the edit, it's like, okay, well it's kind of flat. It's kind of vanilla.
Yeah. And the behind the scenes footage from the iPhone 7 is more compelling than the Red footage.
And I mean, it's, there are limitations of camera. Like I've always hated the claim that like,
Red is a camera, by the way. I keep saying Red. Yeah, it's just a fancy camera.
I always hated the claim that, like, it's not the camera, it's the shooter, because that is partly true. But at the same time, like, if you have this amazing camera and you know its capabilities, or if you have a crappy camera and you know its limitations, then that's going to change the ways that you do things.
Yeah, you're leapfrogging, basically. Like, you're not very good, and your camera's better than you, and then you figure out how to use your camera, mm-hmm. and then you're better than your camera, and then it's time to get a new camera, right. and you're just basically always trying to compensate for, are you better than the camera, or is the camera better than you?
Well, and then you put, like, an award, you put Roger Deakins, or whoever you want, behind a Rebel,
right.
you know, like a crappy DSLR. It's still going to
be incredible.
You can't, it's going to look good as long as he's not shooting in low light. Or as long as he's not trying to do slow. Like, there's things that you got to understand, like, when it comes to the gear, like, understanding, okay, my camera can do this up to this point. And if I want to do anything else, I'm going to need this camera or another camera that can do these other extra things.
Who is the director from the newer, like, DC stuff? I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Oh, Zack Snyder?
Zack Snyder, yeah. I think he had some family tragedy.
Yeah.
And he... got pulled off the project, left the project. I forget which movie it was. And then, like, just as for a fun thing for himself, he was like, I hope it's Zack Snyder I'm thinking about. I think it is.
Zack Snyder did, like, the...
He did Batman iPhone.
Versus Superman,
Yeah. I think it was him. And then he got pulled off. And, mm-hmm. and so he did a project for fun. And to challenge themselves, they used iPhones.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they used iPhones with, like, tons of, like, grip gear and, like, light professional lights and all that. But you know, it, just to show that, like, it's not about... the camera, it's about the creativity behind it, and but of course it adds different challenges for sure.
I think it's definitely a marriage of both of those things, though. It has to be, because you a good cinematographer or a good DP should know what his camera is capable of,
right
you know, and not put, because when you start pushing it to the limits, then you get something that looks shitty.
Right.
But, like, I mean, to that point, though, like, there was a movie, I think it was called, Clementine, I think, on Netflix. I think that's what it was. But it's shot entirely on iPhone. And it's incredible.
No, it's, I know which one.
It's Clementine, isn't it? It's the name of, like,
he has, like, a transgender, like, romance thing.
Yeah, the sex workers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's great.
Shit. Yeah, it's beautiful. Tangerine.
That's what it was. It's the other. It was some citrus fruit, but it was really, really good. And, you know, you watch it, and it's, at first you kind of watch it for the novelty. Okay, it's shot entirely on iPhone. And then you kind of get into it, and like, you because you're able to forget it.
Right.
You know, like, I can't watch West Wing. Like, I want to, everybody talks how great West Wing is. I can't watch it because I can only find it in 4:3. And because of that, I can't turn it off. But I started a movie going, oh, okay, this is made on iPhone. And then I get lost in it. It's like, oh, okay, wow, this is.
Because really, at the end of the day, storytelling is, you know, once you get past the medium, storytelling is storytelling. And you know, that's why I think podcasts and audio in general, I mean, I remember driving across country and listening to books on tape of, like, mm-hmm. H.G. Wells novels with my parents when I was a kid. And, like, I can recall those like they were movies, just mm-hmm. because you, at first you're like, a book on tape, I don't watch, you know, a TV show.
Yeah.
But then you kind of get lost in it, and then you're just in the story. And, I think that's, you know, maybe being lost in what's being created, you know, content today.
And storytelling, I mean, that goes to cinematography as well, because it's, you use that as a tool to portray the emotion that you want to show, or the unease, or, you know, there's a lot of things that you can use to show how your viewers should feel while they're watching that. I did the same kind of thing in concert photography too. That was kind of a mentality, because I went in there with a video kind of film mind. So when I started doing the concert photography, so much of my stuff I've cropped down to 16:9.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not because of anything other than, like, I want this to look like a scene. This shot, I want it to be a scene. I want there to be emotion. I want there to be, like, this is composed a certain way. And I really, it's always been one of those things that probably pisses everybody else off, because they're getting 16:9s, which are really weird crops for photos.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's, if my whole Instagram feed is nothing but 16:9.
Right. Yeah, it's weird now having to make stuff that's, like, in portrait mode on a phone. And I'm starting to wrap my head around it. I think you really just have to shoot it, you know. Anyway, what else can we talk about besides film stuff? Let's talk about camera stuff. let's talk about, here's one thing that is, like, a thing that I'm really interested in exploring on this podcast with future guests. And really, in the beginning, at least, just it's going to be all my friends. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people that we're talking about are, you know, like we mentioned Ryan Phillips, like, he's one of the people I want to have in here. Like, I've just been having conversations with all my friends and going, man, I wish I had a microphone in front of us right now. This is really interesting stuff. I'd like to just re-listen to it for myself, you know?
Yeah.
Because sometimes you go, oh, wow, that, like, we're onto something here, you know? And then, yeah, so one of the things I feel like is reoccurring is this idea of doing, you know, of not having good ideas. I mean, it's important to have good ideas, but of doing those ideas, I think, especially in today's age, the gig economy, you know, is like, you're never going to get good at anything if you don't do it.
Right.
And the best way to, like, carve a path out for yourself is by just doing something, even if it's not good, like this podcast.
Sure.
Maybe at some point you just go,
this is right. Episode zero, so people don't, it's not the first episode.
This is a prequel. Your
first, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is a line check. I'm not sure if we're recording right now. The red light is on. Oh, yeah. You know what? I didn't try out some of the pads on it, you know?
Yeah.
To make sure if they work. So we'll just try them out for the, yeah, they work. I got a couple small ones. Little one.
You hope you have the intro, you have the audience, and then everything else is farts.
Well, I was tempted to do all. I got a couple other ones up. I have a longer one. I think those are good. Those are labeled small farts. I don't know how those will come in handy, but I got a couple more that maybe I can pepper in. But
more farts or more sound effects?
Oh, they're all farts. Yeah, it's all fart based.
No, I get what you mean, though. Like, yeah. Just there's so many times you and I have actually done a couple things where so much of it is, hey, I have this idea, and the way my brain works is, okay, I have to figure out the exact ways to do this thing before we can take the step. And
which is good because you're prepared, sure. Except if you don't ever, if there's a failure to launch because you're waiting to get all those things done.
You never do it.
It's right. And yeah. We know people that just never get stuff done. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of them are a lot more creative and smart than me.
I have people that I know that a lot of it is, okay, we're going to, here's the thing I want to do. And I go, cool, here's my suggestions on how to do it.
Right.
And then it will be months later and they'll say, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm, okay, well, what about that other thing though? And okay, well, here's some suggestions to do this. And it's this thing of like, talking about it constantly, only talking about it, and never actually taking the steps to do it. Even because I think a lot of it is people have fear of failure,
right? Yeah,
which is understandable. There's anxiety that comes with that, but the fear of failure. I mean, there's another podcast I listened to, and it was one of the things that's always stuck with me, because everybody kind of focuses on like, well, what if everything goes wrong?
Sure,
but what if everything goes right?
Right.
Like, what if you do succeed? What if you find out you are good at it? What if you start it and then you suck and then you, like, two tries later, you kind of go, oh, this is how I'm doing. Okay, cool. And you get yourself in a role. Like,
yeah, and I also think the best thing about what if everything goes wrong is, like, if everything goes wrong, then that means the next time that you do it, you know you're not going to make those mistakes.
Yeah.
It's almost like you kind of hope to fail when the stakes are lower because when it really counts, you've already made those failures. So yeah. I try to remind myself of like, oh, if I fail now, that just means that next time I won't fail, you know? And then you just try, it's a weird space to put your head in, but like, you know.
I have a huge list of failures, you know, of things that I have to make sure that I go, okay, cool. I'm not going to do this again. This isn't going to be a thing that I'm going to keep doing. You know, I'm going to make sure that I am recording on this thing. I want to make sure that like, because I mean, dude, the cameras we use, there's been a couple times where You
sticky hit button.
Yeah. And then you go, okay, cool. And then you hit record again. You thought you did, but it's still recording. So when you start your next take,
it's just
you
hit record. In-between.
Yeah. So you start your next take and you hit record and then it stops.
Yeah.
So you go in to post and you're like, wait a minute, I know this good take. Oh shit.
It's all just the in-betweens of, yeah, we got it. All right, that's good. And then it's the camera moving.
It's
at the
floor. Worst.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
It's the worst.
I know. And there's so many of those little things that, especially when you have other stressors that you're focusing on like, did I get this right? Did I get this right? That then your focus is soft or
and
like,
that,
you know.
It sucks when, that's the thing that sucks about being that one-man crew.
Yes.
Is because there's so many things that you have to focus on at once. But like with that, I now have things that I have to put into like little like things in my brain to make sure I don't trip up, which is I don't say rolling Because that's, you know, there's a formula that you have, like it's all muscle memory, but I don't go rolling until I see that little red dot. Like that's my confirmation. I can hit that button, but I have to see that dot to make sure that that's what I'm doing. And sometimes it does.
So that's a good segue into something that I wanted to cover, which is not, because you and I are similar in a lot of our production days are one man show or two man show. One thing that we worked on recently that wasn't a one man show was this commercial for Stag Beer that was awesome. Shout out to Corey Smale.
Great.
And
I had a wire hanging on my penis the whole
night. You just had a kidney.
I was literally three days out of kidney stone surgery.
Yeah, and I was like, "Hey, you're still good to DP and hold the camera, right?" And you said, "Yeah, as long as it's not pushing on my kidney." And I showed, you know, we're gonna wear a body pack that all it does is push on your kidneys. So,
which then, I mean, let's talk about this too, because of that, because I couldn't lift a bunch of stuff,
right?
That made me have to run Focus for you, which I have never done before,
right? Which you announced to everybody, and everybody, like our line producer, was like, "Shh, the clients aren't gonna like that." Yeah, that was funny. And you killed it, dude. I mean, you killed it.
I think it'd be different too in that situation if I kept fucking it up.
And right.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But the fact that I'm like,
you were already killing
it. Not bad for my first time.
Yeah, I don't even know what. And the whole thing, I don't know when this is going to come out or when the pieces are going to come out. Hopefully, people see them. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing was that it was supposed to feel like you're kind of struggling to find focus anyway, because it's a real live kind of thing. So I was in my head like, dude, even if Ben does bad, even if he's trying his best and he keeps missing it, we could just pretend like he's trying it on purpose to miss it, because that's what it's supposed to look like.
The hard thing too was just because the whole scene was just a like
one take.
It was a one take walk through a venue. So there's so many different things happening on so many different planes. And because of that, it's really hard to go, okay, this person is going to be in this exact spot at this exact time.
Right.
So, you know, this guy who's walking across frame here, sure, might be close to that, but he might not be exact. So it's like, okay, I got to make sure, like, I'm watching. I didn't get to see the entire piece in color until the end of it because we were using focus guides.
Yeah, and we were blocking it as we were going. So it's not like you had marks that you knew. Yeah. So, okay, but my reason for bringing that up was that even though you and I could have done that shoot by ourselves, I mean, to a degree, you know, we could have pulled something off like that, because we've done that before. We've done large scale stuff, but man, having those extra people, having an agency and a line producer and PAs, and we brought all the homies out to help with, you know, sort of like running two or three jobs, and you know,
there were so many
Tony and Joey, man. And I mean, so many people that I was nervous that day because it was a big shoot and I had just been sick the whole week before. Mm-hmm. So I was like, my stomach wasn't right. So I hadn't eaten anything in like 12 hours, and I got there and we were prepping everything. And I started to just get that feeling of like, you need energy. And I walked up to like craft service. And when I say craft service, we usually mean like a case of warm water and a couple pizzas on the floor. So I walked up there and there's this beautiful spread of, you know, hundreds of dollars worth of little individually wrapped things, all like stacked and lined up beautifully, and like ice cold Coca-Cola and Red Bulls and everything. And it was like such a small thing that I always feel is so like over the top when I you know, see bigger productions. But in that moment I was like, oh, I get it. You know, like that was an instant moral boost and recharge and physical energy charge. And when I came back 30 minutes later, you know, the trashed table had all been reset to like perfection as it like kept shrinking smaller and smaller. And that was just like a little incredible thing about that shoot.
I wonder if you felt the same way about me though, going up there and taking it and grabbing stuff from craft services. I kind of felt like, man, this isn't for me. This is for everybody else that's here. Even though we're the ones producing the thing, it's like, nah, I'm not supposed to take this. So I would kind of go up there and grab something and just like, okay, yeah, this is cool.
It is weird because we're just not of that world. I mean, I've been on shoots like just observing or like helping with something small, and there's like, you know, this huge craft service budget and you're like, you know, I think sometimes people fall into there's too many people working on a project that you look at and you're like, they needed a 12-man crew to do this?
Yeah.
12-person crew? You know, but it's nice to have people there, the project is better when you have more people helping and when you have more minds working, you know?
There were so many times that night you know, because my only job at that, because I was helping set up and I was helping like walk through and talk through with you guys and kind of figure out like how we wanted to block.
You were doing a lot of things, no sure. matter how humble you're being about it. No, your main job was
my main job was pulling focus. And there were so many times where I'm sitting there on this chair.
Which we should explain. That just means to keep things in. You had a wireless system.
That
is keeping things in focus as I'm moving the camera.
Yeah. And there's so many times I'm sitting there just going, I'm not earning my money. like there's somebody who here is going to see me and go, why is that guy here? Why couldn't he just do this?
You know, there's people working harder there than both of us for sure. But like, you know, they were like lifting stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it is this weird imposter thing of like, why am I getting paid for what I'm doing? And, you know, and you just hope for those moments where when somebody sees something, I mean, when I saw it, I was like, worth every penny, you know, like every single person was underpaid there. Even the extras who were all paid extras they killed it. Like everybody on set. I mean, I'm still riding the high of how fun that shoot was.
It was great
because we do a lot of not fun shoots.
Well, we're not used to being able to have a specific thing to focus on. I love sets like this in the sense that we get there, we have some time, some downtime to bullshit.
Right.
We can, you know, like there's nothing in my eyes. There's nothing better than pre-shoot and after shoot.
Right.
The during shoot is kind of always a blur because it just, I have to be focused.
Yeah. You're like execute.
Like starting and getting there and hanging out and then wrapping up and hanging out are the two best times.
Yes.
But getting there, setting everything up and knowing that, okay, I only have one thing I have to stress about tonight is really good. And it allows me to do that thing 10 times better.
Right.
You know, like if I was running camera.
Sorry. Yeah, if you were running camera.
If I was running camera that night, you know, it'd be one of those things where like, okay, let's talk this out, let's get our shot. And then all I got to do is just get those couple shots a couple times, knowing that you were there maybe pulling focus or maybe you are kind of directing me on what to change.
Right.
You know, and we communicated that between us the whole night.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, maybe you should do this shot instead or maybe this person should move here instead.
Yeah, and there's something so freeing about knowing not everything is on your shoulders. Like even if this is your main job, you know that somebody else kind of knows what that job is like and you have that relationship with them where they can be like, hey, did you think about this? And there's that like give and take of like, dude, thank you so much for saying that. It's not like, hey, when you worry about what you do, I'll worry about what I do. It's like, you're like, oh, dude, thank you. You know,
let me give you a juxtaposition too. Because we have that experience there. And the other end of that, kind of what we're talking about when we're one man crew is at work. You know, when I'm doing commercials or something like that with
which you do a ton of work.
So yeah. I might
for the
have,
radio station, which is weird that you're doing video for radio.
It's but it's
the digital, way of the world. I know it's our time.
But say we have, you know, one of our DJs go out and they're going to promote this store and they're going to do a couple different events.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I might have 2 hours by myself, like running audio, running camera, figuring everything out, getting B-roll, to then maybe produce 4 or 5 videos.
Right.
And then have to turn them around. And it's so, there's times where I'm like, heck yeah, I'm in the zone. I know what I'm doing. I'm getting all these things. But there's also times where it's like, I don't know how this is going to come together.
Mm.
I don't feel remotely confident in the fact that this is going to be good. And it all comes down to just perspective on it.
Right.
You know, like if I had, you know, a full day and I had a huge crew, I know I can produce something incredible, but that's just, it's the turn and burn kind of mentality that we have to have now. Like content now.
Right. Yeah. And we're relatively early in our careers. So it's kind of like, maybe that stuff is going to come later. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or not. But, you know, I mean, we're definitely going about things a non-traditional way, which is exciting. And what's drawing me to all these other creatives, I mean, that's like what I'm so excited about in St. Louis right now is like there's this whole current of people that aren't from agencies that are creating killer work.
Yeah.
Or they're like, they have a 9-to-5, but they in their spare time are doing this incredibly creative, awesome stuff. And the 9-to-5 may be... maybe strengthening it, you know, like all the stuff you do at work is great work. But I mean, at the end of the day, the stuff that you do out of work is the stuff that speaks to me, you know, it's like the creative, crazy, great stuff. And some of the stuff that you do at work is crazy and creative too. But you know, at the end of the day, a client's a client, and yeah, you know, and whatever they want is what they're going to get. And
that's
so,
the thing. It's like it's when I do the stuff outside of that, it's kind of it's a scratching of an itch.
Right.
In the way it's like I am the one who gets to be fully creative here without having to sell something, without having to make sure I get these specific talking points into a video. Like I can just do these images that I want to do.
Yeah, and it's not about the money. It's not about at the end of the day, what are you creating? Which is a segue into, let's talk about Story of the Year, the video. We kind of touched on that, but we did the music video for Miracle, which was at the end of the album cycle. So it didn't get
it came out like a full year after the album.
Yeah. So it didn't get a lot of push, you know, cause that money was already gone, but it was for us, I think, so I grew up loving, I mean, Story of the Year was like my favorite band, Big Blue Monkey, you know? And did you have a connection to them?
I grew up and every one of my friends was obsessed with them.
Okay.
So that's the thing. Like around that time.
You were into jazz though?
So no, I was into like ICP and CKY and System of a Down. And that was, you know, I was like 12 or 13 around that time. It was 02.
How old are you? You're
28.
I'm 32. Yeah. So that you're still, yeah, that was still right in the, I'm 32, so I was graduated 2005. That was like right when they hit. That's like right when that album.
Yeah, I would have been like just getting into high school, maybe.
Yeah,
just
okay.
And now,
but
getting
still,
into high school, that was kind of
my
transition into like who I am today. Like I was starting to kind of discover things about myself.
Sure.
Musically, like what I actually liked, and if I would have been introduced to them sooner. And not just like tunnel vision, I probably would have really gotten into them.
Yeah. But I mean, now, you know, one of the best bands in St. Louis, one of the only bands to make it out of St. Louis, really. Yeah. I mean, in that genre and that, you know, and really, you see it at their shows, like that really talk to a generation of kids that, like, you know, they were like, Until the Day I Die was like cemented in as this like emo, you know, thing that happened.
Anthem.
Yeah, right. And so. Anyway, so great opportunity for us. Mm-hmm.
And I had been working with them. I had done a couple videos for them prior.
Oh, that's right. Yeah you had
at,
done
at the beginning of the album cycle.
Yeah, that's right. At the very beginning, you did.
We did like five of them in one night, and then I think only a couple of them did anything.
But it was the main. What
Bang
was the
Bang.
Main one? Bang Bang was
Bang
the main
Bang
one.
Was a big
yeah.
one.
Yeah,
and that,
but
was
you weren't
big...
the show runner on that, right? You were kind of like it was a weird because Ryan
kind of...
was doing a lot of the content because Ryan's also into film and
photo. I was camera op for that, if anything. And then I'm trying to remember how this all went because it was basically Ryan, I think, got a hold of me because of the video stuff I did for The Point because Moon was on the show at the time.
Oh yeah.
And they had me come out and just do it. And Ryan was like, hey, can you just run camera for this? So
right.
I'm like, okay. I brought out, you know, my Ronin. I brought out a ton of stuff.
Yeah. Flex. It's your chance to flex. Of course,
man. And K Water, who was helping out with Stag and has been helping us.
Shout out to Kevin
K
Water.
So many things. Yeah. Made this incredible set with just this huge video wall with like fire and stuff like that. And we just kind of did like four or five songs. We filmed the performance and the moment I had that it was one of the greatest for me was shooting a bunch of stuff. And then when we had downtime, I would go and dump footage, but I would also open, it was kind of like I do this a lot of times when I'm somewhere where I know I'm going to be there all day and I'll have time.
Right.
Where I'll open my laptop, dump my footage, open Premiere and start kind of coloring and messing with it and like slowing stuff down. That's supposed to be slow-mo.
Get people excited.
Just be like,
because
maybe someone like the client will look over my show and go, holy cow.
Right.
But we had this.
Raise morale on set. Yeah.
We had this band that I knew as, you know, the biggest thing out of St. Louis around that time. Like I remember them being like incredible. Who have done a ton of hugely produced videos on big budgets and things like that, like back in when
$200,000 music videos,
and they're all huddled over my shoulder going, holy shit, dude, this looks amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there like, I did that. I did that shot. You see that?
Right.
I did that.
Yeah.
Like, and it felt really great. And that kind of helped keep me, you know, we were there until like 3 o'clock in the morning and that kind of constant people going, this is awesome. Holy shit. Like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Kept me going.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was, I mean, I remember, that video was great. And that was another one of our connections of us crossing paths without even having met. I had already shot a ton of stuff in that exact same space. So when I saw the video, I was like, oh, that's shout out to Archstudy AV. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I've shot a ton of stuff there on those same screens. And it was, you know, great minds think alike. I mean, you really do. I mean, not that I'm saying that, you know, you're great.
No, please don't let me get a big head.
But I'm saying that I am. That, you know, we somehow fell into these grooves of like, you know, oh, here's this place that can do this awesome thing, and we both find it randomly, and we don't even know that we're working together.
Yeah.
But so fast forward, Ryan did the edit of that, right, of Bang Bang, and then he did two other ones that were more like
lyric videos, if I remember.
Yeah, right.
Low concept. I think in between that, I'm trying to think if
there's one in the creek that they did.
There's that one. I think actually, you know what? I think what got me on that too was doing the Greek Fire video for Coming Out of the Rain.
Oh yeah,
which was just it was a one take.
Yep.
You know, they did it. We slowed it down, but he was singing it at double speed, and it was neat.
Yeah, really cool
idea.
Yeah, and it's fun. You get those little opportunities, and they just build, and it's like proving time. And somebody sees something in you, and they're like, "Okay, this is my person," or like, "Oh, that was fine, but I'm not gonna use them again." But that was nice. And so, yeah, you just kept raising the ante. Oh, I can do this, and I can do that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it got to the point where we did this high concept. I mean, Wolves is a high concept thing. It was at that point the biggest thing for the most exciting client I think I'd ever done. This thing with this like post-apocalyptic like
it was because I don't remember. I think we met a couple times
with no budget. We had no, I mean, there was a budget, like there was a small, I mean, I ended up going out of my pocket paying for stuff because it was like we had to rein in even the concept that we had to be reined in way. We were going to go Mad Max on it and we pulled it back.
I remember how the concept got legs too, because we were coming off of seeing the video for Bang Bang, which had, you know, we had the performance part, and then you had the narrative, which was Dan in this nightmare world being chased by werewolves.
Oh, that's right.
But they had the werewolves had these really cheap rubber masks,
right?
Which for the video, it's fine.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
But they did look like that. You know, they weren't.
They didn't
really
look like
scary.
CGI
they
scary.
Yeah, they weren't like. So when we were talking about like what the idea for Miracle
we're
should
like,
be.
Yeah, you know, these kind of look like guys, wolves and like punks in masks.
And I was like, dude, let's just make
what
them
if
a
they
road
were guys in masks.
Like they're taking and that it's funny, and it's my little itty bitty nugget of pride.
You have more nuggets.
No, but this is one for me.
Okay.
Because after that idea, like the entire kind of image of that cycle started changing to this post-apoc kind of.
So there were, I remember specifically in those conversations, you had a lot of those nuggets that really drove things for, you know, really, you know, changed the course of what we were talking. I mean, which is, you know, why, again, a huge value that, you know, and then also shout out to Adam Russell, who was, you know, he's the bass player in the band, but he also was part of the creative process for a lot of that video. He had the idea of Chinese food restaurant.
Yep.
And that also, so taking it all back to the Stag video, that's so we shot it at, he had this connect with this homie, Corey Smale, that owns this place called Good Fortune Chinese, you know, Chinese food, this like hip restaurant. It was just like the perfect place to shoot.
Yeah.
And so they're, you know, best buds. And so he, you know, does it for super cheap, just covering the cost of bringing his guys in. We shoot there, take his place over for, I mean, God, it was.
Yeah, we were there late.
We shot so much dialogue and ended up using like 5 seconds of it.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, just those connections. And like Corey was an awesome dude and like opened his place up to us and like helped get all these like, you know, staff it. And like we were chopping fish heads and like, it was just this thing.
So that was the thing too, is like that was us. We were all talking and I knew that
you had the fish head chop idea. Well, and I knew shit my pants when you said it.
The whole thing for Wolves was kind of this like throwback to the 80s.
Yeah, the rad.
Know? Like BMX and all that stuff. But the whole road gang thing wasn't too part of it, but I mean, if you go in the 80s, that's where so many of those kinds of movies
lived. What was that, the thing with Kiefer Sutherland, the
Lost Boys.
Lost Boys.
Yeah. But there's so many tropes that you can play on in that. So the idea we had was,
you just recalled one though. Like it was like, oh yep, here it is.
Yeah. You know? Like what if we do this thing where we have this dramatic intro where you can't really see what's going on. He's being chased by something. You don't know what's happening. And he's about to get hit by a bat. And as soon as the bat swings and it hits him, we cut straight to a fish head being chopped on a cutting board in the restaurant.
Right.
And that's our transition to the beginning of the story. And that's, dude,
I lost my mind when you said it. It was like, you didn't have to explain it. You said it. And the moment you said it, I just like, oh, like, you
like
know,
so many 80s movies kind of started like that. I think Gremlins started like that.
See, that's fun. Yeah. To me, it's like, I couldn't recall any one thing. I just knew that's it.
It's the vibe.
Yeah.
And then that evolved to where it was going to be, because I remember we were like, okay, let's do a music video. And then it came out that I think it was mostly Adam wanted to do a whole short film.
Right.
And then we're like, okay, well, let's plan it out. What's our narrative here? And what are we going to do? And how much time does everybody have? And like,
yeah. And there was a lot of like weird, us trying to figure out how things are going to work out. Cause when you have multiple creative minds working on essentially it was a passion project, mm-hmm. you know, everybody working on it after their real job, you know, it's hard. I mean, we were getting to my office at 9 o'clock at night and, you know, and staying up for a couple hours, which, you know, I know like cool which people we were, maybe stay up late, but we're like, waking up
for,
like
for you and I who are getting up early, you know, we're just
killer.
We would try and like meet up to talk and like brainstorm these things.
We just
things.
Run tons of rails of Coke and just, you know, really no.
It would just be us get to your office and go
Coca-Cola.
I don't really want to do this. Let's just go home.
I know. Yeah.
We're just tired.
And it was really, I mean, it was hard. And then remember we started to have to meet up in the mornings cause we were like, we're just so tired by the end of the day. We got to like, you know, go and so some of the best brainstorming sessions though for that. And you know, anyway, so if you haven't seen Miracle Story of the Year, it's one of the things that Ben and I worked on together. That was, I don't know, like, you know, probably one of the coolest things I've done. I mean, it's definitely,
we always seem to like up the ante on music video projects.
Well, I know now I look back on it and I'm like,
because I look back on it now and it's still incredible. Cause if you got to think about all the moving parts that were in it, cause we have the whole narrative part, which I mean, this was like multiple days of shooting.
Right.
Right. So we did the Chinese food thing, which was, I think the first thing we did for that was it.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. But
and then after that we did the performance part, which was, I mean, that was a 16 hour day.
Oh my God. And it was, and we were burning barrels of black tar in an enclosed space.
Yeah,
and
actual fire barrels inside.
Yeah, I remember drummer Josh was like just, you know, I think he got like a migraine and was vomiting and coughing and like.
He's fine.
I mean,
though.
Those dudes, I'll say, story of the year, those dudes are hardcore pros because they didn't enjoy a lot of it and they killed it, you know? Well, I mean, they
not to mention,
pushed hard.
We spent 12 hours setting that up. To do that. So, like, if you watch the performance part in that and you see the set, like, that was an empty warehouse.
We built the whole set that just me, you,
and Ryan.
And Ryan and Joey.
I think Joey was there. Yeah. I'm trying to think who all showed up.
We
had hands.
There was Tony Rocca was there. A bunch of the homies.
We spent so long of it because it was all one thing. It wasn't just there's different scenes.
Yeah,
here.
We worked a full 12 hour day before we actually started shooting the music video.
And then
video.
We shot from like.
Because we had to shoot at night. That was a
thing.
Yeah,
and I think it was like, what was it, like 8 we started?
Yeah. Oh, and so and a quick little buttoned, like, end on that, like, you know, like a moral of a story is like, we were supposed to shoot that in a location that we had secured that was a lot of finagling had to be done. And basically we got there.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
The whole thing fell apart, basically. Like, we got a call from the owner of the thing saying, you're not shooting here. Like, you know, you guys failed to do X, Y, or Z.
That wasn't for the performance day. That was for the chase day with all, like, that had more moving parts almost.
Oh, you're right. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Because that was here's this other huge part of the narrative that we got to do, which we got to coordinate these people with this car.
Well, this wood sawmill, and we had all these vintage cars that we were bringing in, and, like, it was this whole thing. And basically, they said, like, you're not shooting here. And we were like,
We're already here.
And so, but you know, you just have in those moments, you have to think it's fine. We're going to figure something else out.
Yeah.
I'm not going to freak out about it. We're just going to execute the next thing. So what's the next thing? Find a location. And we go, hey, we shot, you know, in this incredible, like dilapidated building right down the street. What if we just shot outside of that? And it ended up you know, being hands down way better of a place to shoot.
Not only that, though,
we had electricity. We had so many things that we didn't have.
Do you know what we had, too, that we could never have counted on?
What's that?
That giant fire.
Oh, that's right. There was a transformer exploded.
And caught like a whole thing of pallets on fire.
Right.
So that whole scene in that video where you see like them walking in front of this fence in front of that would just happen.
That
to
was
be
a
there.
Natural fire happening and in North City.
We literally filmed there like
as the ambulances
the fire department.
My footage is ambulances pulling up and cutting it right before the fire trucks pull up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
So and that was a huge part in that video to kind of show like, okay, this is the theme. This is a burned up world kind of post APOC right. kind of thing.
Yeah. And you can't freak out about shit. Like you just pivot and then,
yeah.
And that was proof that like, oh, this pivot is working out great. This is working out better. You know, it was a blessing in disguise, you know?
And in this too, if you're doing it alone, it's really easy to start sweating. Like it's really easy. I remember I was working a point fest and it was right after we got bought. By the new, so we were owned by MS and we are now owned by Hubbard. We were bought in beginning of 08. And it was my first point fest where I am like running the point fest interview room and everything like that. So I'm kind of like, this is my thing. I'm owning it.
Which has become like a huge thing that you guys do. Like you guys do incredible coverage of like really great coverage of huge A-list, you know, artists. I mean, you know, yeah.
But this is the first time that it's like, okay, this room is mine. Right. And I am running it, and I'm going to tell people what to do, and we're going to live
stream.
There's
nobody that knows how to do what needs to be done besides, like, you're the only, it's not like there's somebody you can ask, like, hey, how does this work?
Yeah,
like,
well, and that's the thing, I was using a new thing, I was using this, like, live stream camera thing, so, like, the idea was, yeah, we'll talk about, let's do it live, let's do all these interviews on Facebook Live.
Right.
And, theoretically, it would work. Everything, like, every time we tested it in studio, every time we tested it in the office, like, this will work, don't worry. And then, as soon as we get there, the one thing we needed to count on was good internet. And we didn't have an actual like hardline Ethernet. And all of a sudden,
I was there at this. I remember.
This is the one I had you help do B-roll. All of a sudden, I don't have the thing I was depending on having, which
is
in
internet.
Years past, I always had.
Yeah.
You know, so this is something that like, it's not like I didn't prepare for it. Like every other year I had great internet there or I had a hardline or something and I did not have it here. So all of a sudden I'm like, oh shit. And the band's like 5 minutes from walking in. I'm like, fuck, what do I do? Oh shit. Like this whole thing is like, and it put me in a
personal hotspot
the whole
your
day.
Phone.
Nope. We're going to tear this down. We're not doing them live. The promotions guy from the point came in. He's like, hey, what's going on? I go, hey, interviews are not going to be live today. We're going to get them edited and put up. This isn't working. So this is what we have to do.
Right.
And switched cameras to one of our cameras on sticks. And that was our day. But because of that, because I was rushing, because I was like, I got so scattered, I ended up messing up my audio for the first interview, which sucked.
Sure.
You know? But that's something that you have to eat.
Yep.
Because it's like, oh, shit, I didn't think to change these couple switches for this because I wasn't expecting to do this. But hey, we're good for the other ones.
Right.
And the thing that, like, I wasn't bummed out about messing that, because I didn't really mess it up. I wasn't bummed out about not having that thing to count on. I was bummed out about letting everybody in that room kind of see me stressed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because it's like, I'm supposed to be the representative of what we're doing today.
Right.
And if you see me not able to handle a wrench thrown in the gears, you know, how much faith do you have in me?
That's an interesting thing about being on set is, that you, as a lead in a leadership role, wherever you are in that, when people are looking to you, they want to see you setting the tone for what things are going to be like. And something that we have to, you know, remind ourselves of is as we get to senior positions of leadership in any production, if you have a shitty attitude, other people have shitty attitudes. If you have a positive attitude, and you're often well justified to have a shitty attitude, but you just have to grit your teeth and smile and go, that's okay. It's okay. We're going to do this. Because if you don't, everybody else goes, oh yeah, this is fucked. You know,
you need to have that guy with you who you're allowed to vent with.
Yeah. Secretly.
Who's able to
sheet over each other.
Able to, you can go to him and go, dude, everything's fucked because of this. And then he can wear his smiley face that you don't have right now and go, all right, we're good. Fine. Here's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And that's key because morale, man, like if you don't believe in the project, why the hell should I? And then why am I spending the time here?
Yeah. And I think that translates to anything that anybody is doing. If you can just grit your teeth and not, you know, not wear that on your sleeve. You know that you're going to not poison other people's, mm-hmm. you know. And I mean, it's not that you always have to just bury things down and push them down, but in those environments, yeah, you don't want to poison the well. And, you know,
I don't think there's in this industry that we're in, I don't think there's anybody that can say that they have gone into each project and done it perfectly, because you need the ones that you fuck up. You need to have those stories.
So I think you have a problem if you think that you executed anything perfectly. Yeah. You know, there's always something you should be able to tweak.
I had no idea how the stack thing was going to turn out, but the fact, that I could hear the agency guys who they are the client, the people that are paying for all this.
Well, sort of,
who were kind of like
Stack's the client, but yeah.
You know, they were the go-between.
They're all,
saying, this is awesome. This looks great. This looks great. I'm like, oh shit, we're doing a good job. Okay, cool. Like I had that kind of like, because dude, imposter syndrome is the worst in this.
Yeah. And it's like a necessary thing, because I think if you don't have that, if you're like, I'm killing it, I'm badass, like you're not going to push yourself. It's not a healthy place to be in. I mean, not that it's healthy to never think that you're good enough at what you're doing, but
I think there's something to be said about thinking that you can always be doing better.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't be depressed about it. But I legitimately, you know, all the concert stuff that I've done, you know, I think that each show I do better, but I also, when I am doing it, I'm like, man, these aren't that great. And then if I look back 4 or 5 years at the stuff that I started with, like, oh yeah, okay, never mind. No, these are fine.
So, okay. I was having, so a future guest that I want to have on, John Michael Ryan, who's a great, DP and just, you know, just an awesome dude. I had a little lunch meeting with him the other day, and we said something that was funny that you just totally reminded me of, which is, he was saying immediately after he's done with something, he feels like it's shit, you know, when he's doing it, it's great. And the moment that he's done, he's like, it's not good. And I thought about that, because I'm like, I mean, that was really like sad and disheartening for me to hear him say that, you know? And I was thinking, I have the same thing, but I have like a week in between. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, I think it's because he's smarter than me, you know, like he's so smart that his brain works so quickly that he's able to figure out like, oh yeah, I would change these things. And I'm a little bit dumber. Yeah. So I have like a week of like, oh, I'm pretty good. And then my slow brain starts to be like, oh, you could have done this better. And I think for people that are dumber than me, there's probably only a few in the world that they go through life maybe for like a 6 month stint of being like, I'm pretty good. And you know, and it's just that like, the gap in between how willfully ignorant you are of the things that you could have done better. And I don't think it's, I think it's maybe an impediment to be so smart and so firing so quickly that you can't just take that moment to just enjoy, like you did something you should be proud of, you know?
I want to talk about real quick about one of the other projects we did before we did Miracle, which was The Ride for Greek Fire. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because, you know, we did it.
We actually did it after, but turned it out.
Was that what it was?
We had start. Yeah. Anyway.
No. Hold on. Timeline. Ride was first. Miracles was after that, and then we did True Colors after that.
Oh, maybe you're right. Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyways, but we did The Ride and
for Greek Fire. Yeah.
For Greek Fire, and there was the other day, like it was one of like the suggested videos on YouTube for me, because I was just watching music videos, and that was one of the ones that was suggested. And so I watched it again, and it was my first time seeing it in like a year, probably since when we did it.
Sure.
And I'm watching it going, holy shit. it's really good.
It really is good.
We did a really fucking good job on it. And I'm not trying, because I hate the idea of like complimenting myself, but I never allowed myself to feel that way.
Right.
You know, because so many projects that we do, I think the reason why some people go in the project go, oh, this is shit, is because it's really easy to only remember the shit that stressed you out about the project.
Right.
You know, so like, let's talk about that day. The first day we shot, this was supposed to be a lyric video.
Right.
And we didn't
We're really going to shoot some B-roll of some silly stuff in a high school.
We had no concept.
And then we're going to throw lyrics over it. Uh-huh. I mean, I was just there to hold a camera. I mean, and it was basically, we were both kind of like, Moon, this is your thing. And tell us what you want.
This was one of the sets that I was running too.
Right.
You know? And the first thing.
And it was last minute as fuck. It was location literally the day before. Yep. Very stressful.
The bad dog rental that we had when we had some gear We had a giant light that we were counting on and didn't work.
Yeah, like the cable was severed internally. Yeah.
Yeah, didn't work. Yep. So that one thing that we were counting on, so then we had to go to the hardware store and buy it.
Like 1,000 work lights and
that
try and
barely even good enough.
Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah.
But like all those things, like that's all I'm thinking about. But again, that was a project that we didn't have a plan on. We didn't mean for that thing to be a full music video. That was supposed to be just a lyric video. And we get done with that whole day. We shoot a ton of stuff. And all of a sudden I'm like, you know, this needs to be more. Like,
I mean,
like
I think I was on the set, but that's fine. Yeah. Or maybe we thought, yeah.
We probably both, you know. But it was my set, so.
Yeah, it's your set, so you take credit for it, yeah. And, yeah, like, this is not, we're doing a disservice to each other if we don't shoot live stuff for this. And then we got that next.
And that was kind of our first full band live thing. Because
we fell into it. We fell into it, 100%.
Yeah. We did a couple things with the Lummox stuff, but that was usually just one musician and then everything else.
Right.
But this was full band. And then, I remember getting to, because it was another school we had to find. So we had to get the gymnasium.
Right.
And getting there and going.
Shout out to Moon on his, he's connected to everybody. And just people love doing him favors. And we did that at Liberty High School in Lake St. Louis. Yep. And I don't know what that principal's name was. But
I don't remember either.
But I wish he was my principal growing up, because what a badass guy. He let us have the run of that place anyway.
Getting there that day and knowing the stuff that we needed to do and me trying to go, okay, guys, here's the plan. Here's what we're going to do. And you're doing this with friends. So you're trying to be that guy that's kind of like, I'm running the show. But everybody's like, okay, whatever, dude. We'll show up and you tell us what to do. And
right.
And I'm kind of looking for more like cooperation with everybody.
Right.
So that's already kind of making me like, oh, I'm not getting that. So, okay, well, this is how today is going to go. And then, you know, we had our shot list of things that we needed to get, which our shot list is usually a foam core board with sticky notes.
Right. Yep.
With shitty doodles on them.
Yeah. I don't know how to draw.
And then we executed everything.
Yeah.
And
everything was going good. We had, so there was a big thing where we filled this gymnasium up with haze, you know,
smoke. Entirely filled it up. And we had a window.
Well, so we basically had, the place was filled up with smoke and we had cleared it with the principal, who said, I talked to the alarm company and, you know, you guys are going to be fine to do it. All the smoke detector thing is turned off and you'll be good. And we were originally planning on shooting from like 8 to 3. And so great. We don't have to worry about the smoke. We're filling that fucker up and everything's great. And we're just getting the very last couple shots.
Last shot, man.
And we're just running a little bit over time, but like nobody cares. There's nobody there. It's great. Everybody's having a great time. And then we get a knock on the door. There's
And remember too, the alarm would go off, but it wouldn't report to dispatch. So
they were resetting.
A couple times he would come in and go, "Oh, sorry, all right, let me turn this off." Okay, cool.
Yeah. Which is what the alarm company said. So the alarm would go off, and it wouldn't be a big deal, and he'd reset it if we tickled the alarm too much.
Yeah.
And that had been happening all day, so everything's fine. And then we look over, and there's four fully uniformed firefighters, like with, you know, pissed off looks on their face, because we had gone over our allotted time and they had
by like 15 minutes.
Yeah. And so then that system had turned itself back on and now it was reporting to fire dispatch. And then we had basically dispatched the fire department.
So concerned about having to pay some sort of fine for that.
Yeah, because there is a fine. Yeah. I mean, they didn't get fined, but there is a fine that they can enact on that. And I was more concerned about it being our set and we fucked up our set.
Right.
And, you know, Greek Fire was going to be mad at us because they were going to get penalized by their connection with the school. It turned out that the school was like laughing. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, everybody was like, once you explain, because the only thing they walked in.
We did our due diligence and we just had a little fuck up there at the end.
Yeah. Because as soon as they walked in, they're like, is that theater smoke? We're like, yeah. He's like, okay. And they just walked out. And then we made sure to have them talk to the principal. And he explained, like, we had this thing. We were just running a little bit over. And it was fine. But, like, man.
Yeah. So now, and talk about failures. So that's a failure, clearly. And so now, on every shoot, I am so
conscious
of that. Hyper aware of that. You know, calling dispatch and, like, you know, just that whole thing, which is, like, I kind of already knew about that, but now I know about that. Like, now it's burned into my
brain
for one of the first questions I asked. Because you add atmosphere to everything, it makes everything look better. And so
we could have had to pay a $500 fine or however much it was for that. You know, like, it's
just why we have insurance.
Yeah.
Which is my deductible would have been $500. But, So, yeah, we do cool things and we're doing more cool things. What do we got on the horizon? I don't even know.
Well, a lot of it, the stuff that you and I've been talking about is just getting out and doing. I mean, that's right. That's the big thing. Like, there's, you know, we did a bunch of stuff with bands that are now not on album cycles.
Right.
You know, so we're trying to figure out what the next creative is there. We want to do more with
find,
that stuff.
Yeah, find independent artists that are releasing singles or even creating projects. I mean, yeah, it's a hustle to try to find people to pay you to do work where you're not really getting paid.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we pocket a couple hundred bucks, but really it's like, and that's really gear rental. I mean, at the end of the day, we're trying to find people to invest money essentially in themselves to pay for the production so that we can do stuff that just tickles that itch that we have to be creative. It seems like an obvious proposition, but it's hard to find that marriage sometimes.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're kind of in a dry spell. I'm hoping we wet our whistles a little bit.
Is that a whistle? I've been wanting to press that all day.
I'm trying to cycle through. I guess we'll leave some more for, you know. Oh, here's for failed jokes. Or if you really miss one, you could.
You know? It's supposed to be crickets, but that, I mean, that's kind of like...
It sounds like a wooden...
like a little Dutch boy on a bicycle. And he's just wheeling over at you disapprovingly.
I can't wait to add more to this pad. That's it's going to so be funny. Great. Yeah, it's good. All right, where are we at? We're at a minute or so, hour 06.
1 minute?
It's pretty good.
One minute.
I just started recording. What else do we have? I don't have any like bits really for this podcast. Like, you know, and now we're going to take calls from, you know,
I can go outside and call in.
I'm looking forward to having you more here. Yeah. Like I want to have reoccurring, guests, you know, mainly because I know the way I consume podcasts is like, I just like to listen to people. Like once I know two people's thing, you know, it's fun to just listen to them talk. And I'm so excited about, I think we're going to rope in a lot of people that friends that we have in common that are doing really cool things in St. Louis and that deserve a spotlight, you know, on them, however small this podcast might be.
Well, and also I think I'm really interested in seeing who you pull from St. Louis as well, because there's a lot of people I don't even know about.
Oh, because nor me. I know.
You'll get guests and they'll say, hey, you should probably talk to this person. And
yeah.
And it's just going to spider web.
You start
web from
going
there.
Down, yeah, the spider web. And, you know, I like there's so many people that you're closer to, like through the radio station that I, you know, that I'm friends with, but like, it's awkward to be like, hey, will you come have coffee with me and talk? But I feel like the podcast is giving me sort of a reason to like have a sit down and get them on record talking about kind of the stuff that we're talking about. I don't know. And it's really just making time to see friends is nice. So I hear a pitter patter of people upstairs. So I think we're going to call it there.
Do you have an outro song?
Ben, well, I have the same intro as the outro. Ben Vogelsang will hear. There we go.
It's all going wrong.
It's a class for Ben Vogelsang. Thank you for coming in, sir. I love you. And can't wait to do episode 2.
I'm going
to
be on the second episode
of the Jordan Phoenix Show. Thanks, everybody.